Hey everyone, welcome to In Your Element from Tetramap, where our focus is on developing people and business the way nature intended. Our guests will be sharing their expertise on what it's like when you're working in your element and working in a great team where people value each other's differences. I'm Louise Duncan, your host, and look forward to sharing this with you in the coming weeks. Today's guest is Leila Okai from the UK. Leila is the founder and director of Diverse Minds UK. And Diverse Minds aims to create a positively productive workplace for all through training, coaching, and consultancy, with a particular focus on well-being, mental health, and by understanding differences. Now, Leila's got a really impressive background and over 16 years experience in developing and implementing diversity, inclusion and equality practices, and was formerly head of Centre for Equality, Diversity and Inclusion at Imperial College London. Leila's developed her own frameworks and is certified in a number of different tools, and she uses Tetramap in her work frequently to help people understand and value their diversity and differences. So Leila, it's an absolute pleasure to have you with us for the In Your Element podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. It's such an honour to be here.
It's a pleasure. And last year, I wanted to just acknowledge that Leila was really generous enough to share some insights into her work with different teams and organisations, and facilitated a webinar for our global community on how she saw Tetramap linked with and overlaid with culture. So thanks for that, Leila. We decided to call the podcast In Your Element, as it aptly describes the work we do with nature, with teams, and the whole essence of feeling great about being uniquely you. So, and my first question, Leila, is when you are in your element, what are you doing, thinking, or feeling?
Yeah, and I thought this was such a brilliant question, and I keep thinking about what is it that how can I condense the activities I do when I'm in my element. So my elements, I'm high earth and fire, so they are both tied, and slightly below that is water, and then my air preference is quite low. So when I'm in my earth fire element in a professional context, I think I am getting emails done, replying to people, coming up with ideas, helping other people solve problems in terms of what could we do about this, or we've got a challenge around how we get managers to understand mental health or their team members, what should we do? Here's a plan, get it done, send it to them. And then I think in my personal life, my elements show up with, and this is going to sound hilarious, but planning, so doing all the fire things around innovation and ideas, and booking the earth element holidays.
You're a holiday lover, are you?
Well, I love planning. I think we have a joke in the family that I love planning more than I like going on them. But yes, I think those are the things that I'm doing, and I'm feeling enthused by ideas. I'm feeling energized by the possibilities, and I'm just feeling really accomplished when I get things done. I have to get things done, otherwise I just feel like the day's been wasted. Yeah. So that's a very important part of being in my element.
Well, don't forget when you're next planning to book a trip to come and see us here in New Zealand.
Yeah, absolutely.
So Leila, I just wondered, as most people know who'll be listening to the podcast, it's all about nature. So I wanted to ask you if you could share something about nature that's important to you, and how does this relate to human nature, if at all?
Again, another one I've been thinking about, because I have to say I'm a real urbanite, but I have thought of something, which is even in dense inner city spaces or city spaces, you still find nature, and you find nature in different ways. So you might find a window box with some beautiful flowers. You might find a small patch of greenery. You might find an inner city park. There's a campaign in Britain run by the Royal Horticultural Society called Greening Grey Britain, which I think is really brilliant. And it's all about how do we create greenery and tranquility in grey city spaces. Mm. So that's a connection for me in nature. And often if I feel that I've been sitting at my desk all day. I'm really lucky I can just walk out of my door and there's a big park and I can have a walk around there. Now, I suppose it's very maintained nature, if you like, but it's still nature nonetheless. And there's an owl that's in the park in the evenings and things like that. And I think my point is you can find nature in unexpected spaces. And then in relation to human behaviors, you can find unexpected connections and tranquility in anyone. That doesn't mean it's easy to find. That doesn't mean it's always something you'd have a connection with, but that you can always find something unexpected about someone else and a connection, and how important it is to remember that, especially with the Tetra Map tenets of reducing conflict, and how we might not like someone, but we can find some kind of connection and some way to work with them and some way to value who they are, even though we might not understand where they're coming from.
I liked what you said about finding tranquility in that connection.
Because I think you can, and I think it is difficult, isn't it? And people want to have lots of friends at work, and that's brilliant if you do. But I'm also of the opinion that you can't be best friends with everyone, and that's fine, but you can find a professional point where you both agree to disagree, but you can still work together in a productive way. And you can still have those moments where, you know, like nature, you turn the corner and there's a surprise, and a pleasant surprise. So I think it's thinking about it in that way.
That's a good illustration. I like that one. Thank you, Layla. Yeah, and I think those things like the walking meetings are certainly now becoming, I know your focus is on wellness and all that kind of thing. So the walking meetings are certainly, I've read a few things recently about what difference they're starting to make to people, particularly, as you said, people who are urbanites, people living in central London, central Birmingham, those kind of places.
Yeah, absolutely. And another thing I thought about with the nature question was, I love deserts as well. So deserts are quite interesting environments, aren't they? You think they're harsh, there's no life in them, and actually there is lots and lots of life. You have to, if you're not used to that environment, you normally need a guide or someone to show you and explain things to you, which I've been fortunate enough to have. And I think the other point is that even in harsh landscapes that feel overwhelming and that there's no life, that there's always something there. So when you scratch the surface, it's to see there's always something there. So in difficult workplace situations, in difficult environments, thinking about restructures, mergers, changes where people feel a loss, and it is very difficult, and of course you need the support around you need a guide, there is always another way, or there is always life when you scratch that surface.
That's interesting. And that desert metaphor that you used about scratching the surface and there's always something underneath there which tells you that life exists is quite an interesting metaphor too. Thank you. How did you spark your interest in deserts?
I've been to a few deserts. I don't know what it is. There's something quite, when I've been on holiday, there's just something that really calls to me about deserts. So, and I'm not really an animal lover either, but I really like camels. It's very strange, isn't it? I think we went to Petra, we went to Wadi Rum in Jordan. And it was, there's just something very, very magical and beautiful about the silence and the, again, it is about synergy, the synergy of how everything works together to preserve and work with the precious water that there is. And sustainability is absolutely a key tenet of that. And we stayed in this eco village in the middle of the desert in Jordan, and it was absolutely beautiful. It was really dry, really arid, but the resources they didn't use electricity, so they'd come in the evening and there'd be candles everywhere, and it was practical, but it also made it really beautiful. So yes, it just makes me realise we have so much often in the West, and how we need to think more sustainably and manage that, and also sustainability around our own personal emotions and resources, and other people's personal emotions and resources.
And I was just thinking about what you were saying about the water. There's no waste. Where if you have a very little amount of water, you're very conscious of conserving it and not wasting it. And so that's another connection really, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And valuing that water element, which in some corporate environments isn't done. So that's another parallel for me. But your water are your people element around empathy, connection. And if we don't value that, you know, if we forget about that importance of that element, everything else can fall apart.
Yeah, it sustains us all. Thank you. How interesting. So, Layla, I asked you if you had a short reading or a quote, and I just wondered if you could tell us which one you've chosen and why.
Yes, so I have chosen a short reading from a brilliant book called Rejection Proof, which is by a fantastic man called Jia Jiang. And Jia has a very interesting story. He's done some fabulous TED Talks. So he's originally from China, lives in America, and his book is all about his journey around rejection, how he wanted to set up a business and how he failed in a certain way, but his wife said, no, come on, I gave you 3 months to have a break from a conventional job. You go and do what you need to do. And what actually happened was he went on this long journey of rejection, and he did all these activities and exercises. So, and he's documented them all. There's a video for each day. I think it's called 30 Days of Rejection. So he'd go to someone and say, can I borrow $5, and record their response and really try and expose himself to rejection so he didn't feel hurt anymore. And it is an absolutely brilliant book. I'm going to read his 3 points, and in the back of the book, he's got a rejection toolbox. So this is the first from the first chapter. It's called Rethinking Rejection. So rejection is human. Rejection is human interaction with two sides. It often says more about the rejector than the rejectee and should never be used as the universal truth and sole judgment of merit. 2, rejection is an opinion. Rejection is an opinion of the rejector. It is heavily influenced by historical context, cultural differences, and psychological factors. There is no universal rejection or acceptance. 3, rejection has a number. Every rejection has a number. If the rejectee goes through enough rejections, a no could turn into a yes. So that's my short reading.
Wow, there's a lot to consider in that, Layla. What a great insight. And I think that would help so many people. Why did you choose that particular book to share? It's great. I've not heard of it before.
So I think that's one of the reasons that he is well known in certain areas of America, but I just really valued what he had to say. And when I came across him, it was quite a difficult time professionally for me. It helped me through some difficult situations. And I suppose for me, I've always been very afraid of rejection because I've always felt that it's a personal reflection. I'm not good enough. And I'm not a perfectionist actually at all, but I think in the past there has been that thing about pleasing people or doing things to a standard where people commend you. And for me, there's been a lot about unhooking from praise and criticism and the sort of quote unquote good girl syndrome. And I just think that for some people, this could be really helpful as well in terms of thinking about the elements. So, you know, high earth element, I want to get things done. If I get rejected, it stops me doing what I need to do. And that's not a very pleasant place to be in. Potentially, I go into my stress levels, which makes me blunt. I'm not going to get people on my side. High air element, I want to get things done. Oh, I have a question. I hear rejection. I don't get my question answered. I'm trying to be logical. I'm trying to help the organization. I go into, you know, abundance or my stress level of the air element. I start getting critical. I'm not going to build the connection. I'm in my water element. Rejection might be really painful for me to hear. I go into my stress zone. I become hesitant. People think, well, they can't make a decision, and they move on. And then in my fire element, I hear rejection. I think, well, I'm really not interested anymore. I go into easily distracted stress zone. And people think, well, they're not interested in the project, for example. But I think if we can reframe rejection in whichever elemental preference we have, it can be very helpful then for us to rethink it as an, you know, that it's human, as an opinion, it has a number. And how do we need to reframe that in order for someone to hear it? Or do we need to just do things differently and that's okay?
That sounds like a really helpful framework in which to unpick those things, because, you know, most of us have experienced that feeling on a day-to-day basis, as you described it, I'm not quite good enough. And yeah, but that's a self-fulfilling prophecy to a certain degree. But this just sort of depersonalizes it almost.
It does, and it takes practice. I think it's a muscle, isn't it? That you, people will feel, yeah, and some people will feel it more acutely. I it's still a journey for me every day. So I wanted to share that. Although I have gotten better at it, and often I forget proposals that I've sent out, and then when I hear something, I think, oh gosh, I'd forgotten about that, and I don't view it as a rejection anymore. So, which is helpful for me because it means I can then move on to the next thing and think, well, I've got a framework now for someone else if they ask me for this kind of proposal. But yes, I think it's an iterative process, easier for some people than others. But yes, I just really wanted to share it as a resource, and also his YouTube videos, because not only are they insightful, they're also very funny in a very genuine, lovely way, so that we can, you know, it doesn't feel like you have to do this and you have to do that. It's, this is my journey. Perhaps you'd like to think about, you know, how you view rejection and how you could build your rejection proof self.
Well, what I'll do, Layla, is I'll put that link and the book, everything, in the show notes so that people can pick it up from there when they're listening to the podcast. Thank you.
Great.
I just wondered, now we're turning our attention to a story about your work, either with TetraMap or not, something that's been meaningful for you and something that's been a surprise, a highlight, or even a great learning experience.
So I'm going to talk about the way in which I have integrated TetraMap, so doing a TetraMap sessions with other psychometric tools in the afternoon. I think the beauty of TetraMap is that it isn't psychometric, and I say this quite clearly, that it's simple, it's really effective, and it helps you not only to understand yourself, but to understand other people. And going back to my work that I do in culture, and I mentioned it in the webinar, which is how I developed the culture framework with TetraMap, is my work on Black and Asian minority ethnic, so BAME for short, leadership programs. Again, it's so interesting because these programs that I run, one morning is dedicated to TetraMap. And what I find, and I know other facilitators have this challenge too, is that 90% of the room have a high water preference. And I did it the other day and I had to get people to stand up. I said, right, could you please just stand up if you have a high water element? And almost all the room stood up. And I said, who would like to go to their second elemental preference? And people did. And then there was a fantastic presentation. It was absolutely brilliant. They did a kind of acting, sort of a sketch of what it's like to be water, and they played this, you know, water element, they played this water music, and they were all swaying on chairs, and they said, come and join us, have some cake, be part of the team. And I think it never surprises me how inventive and creative people are, and how the penny really drops for them around, oh my goodness, there's nothing wrong with me, this is just the way I choose to operate, and I need to understand how it might feel for other people. And just how with Black and minority ethnic cultures, there tends to be this high water element, even if they're second, third, fourth generation, because of culture and because of the way I think many of us have grown up and around expectations. So that's, and again, I know that I know it, but it's always an interesting element for me to understand more of and to see the light bulb moments for other people. And then in the afternoon, I'll often use something called the team management profiles from TMSDI International. And again, that is a psychometric tool, and you get a report, and it's about your role in a team. So there are eight different parts of the team, and you have normally three preferences. And then I connect that with TetraMap. So I say to people, okay, so these roles, where would they be in connection to your TetraMap preferences? And what it helps people do is to match their job role and where their strengths are with also their communication preferences, and also gets them to think about how their manager might see the role and their communication preference. Even if they don't know, they can make an educated guess and work out where the pinch points might be and how they need to improve their communication, and which elements of their job they want to ramp up, and which elements of their job they might think, well, I want to do less of that, or I could manage that differently. So for me, it's about bringing the two together, the psychometric and the non-psychometric, and how they're complementary and not mutually exclusive.
I think that's really nice, and I think there's an opportunity in that for others to learn about the value of framing how one actually helps you understand the other at a deeper level. In probably both, you understand, you know, your TetraMap preference may help you understand your job role, i.e. if you're, perhaps your job role isn't feeling that great with you, your understanding of having a TetraMap preference may actually help you to unpick that a little bit further for yourself. And that's often what a lot of people say. It's not actually in opposition to something, it's just helped me go deeper in some way or another. So I think that was really interesting. And I wondered what made you chose to use two things in connection with one another in that. Was it the nature of the work, or was it just something that you decided would help people unpick a little further?
I think, yeah, and I think it's the starting with something very simple and energetic, getting people thinking differently, and then also having the psychometric, which is brilliant, but it can feel quite heavy and clunky if you just go straight into it. And also just not wanting to compromise. So I wanted both tools. So I had to make them work together, because I thought it was so important. People could think about their culture with Tetramap. I think Tetramap's such a brilliant way that people can think about their culture and, you know, putting together the iceberg model and thinking about their personal culture and also their organizational culture and where the two could meet or collide, and thinking about the tension points there. So I feel that Tetramap's a very good way to do that.
Mm. Of those experiences for you as a facilitator that came as a surprise, or is it just a continual learning experience from your point of view?
It's not really a surprise, but it's lovely to see how much people enjoy it, how much people, they love making the tetrahedrons. I always have someone who knows about Buckminster Fuller and can tell me some other things that I didn't know, especially when I do it in, you know, university environment. So that's always a lovely surprise. How people come up with creative presentations, that, again, that is always a surprise, and it's lovely to see. And just the way people start to think about their personal culture and their workplace culture and why they may or may not be able to bring their unique, authentic selves to work. Mm. And it goes back to the point that we talk about it a lot, don't we? There's the psychological safety and the trust, and what, you know, and also talk about flex, the flex and the stretch. So where do you flex your culture or your personality without compromising your values, and where is it too much of a stretch that you're not willing to do? So you might not be willing to talk about something that you did outside of work that's very aligned with your culture, because it's exhausting for you to explain it, you don't really want people to know about it, and that's okay. But could you ever get to that point where that would be okay, and why is it important? So it's just having those continual conversations about culture, authenticity, workplace culture, and what feels safe.
How cool is that? And I think there's a lot of learning in that for other facilitators that don't have your level of experience or knowledge, because we're all walking into those cultural experiences, the more multicultural societies that we live in. We're walking into that as facilitators day in and day out. And it's lovely to hear you explain that so simply and easily, and the value that it brings to the participants, which is so cool. Thank you. And finally, Leila, I was wanting to ask you if you had anything that might be a gift to leave with the listeners about anything to you that's about developing great teams naturally. Mm. Was there one thing that you'd particularly like to share on that?
So the thing that keeps coming back to me is around sustainability, and yes, and how to, where, you know, when doing facilitations or thinking about Tetramap, how do we make teams realize their sustainability potential? And what do I mean by that? I mean, so once they discover their elements and their elemental preferences and the elemental preferences of those in a team, and it could be a big team or a small team, what are going to be the key elements and the key factors in order for them to work together and be sustainable? And often you can't predict sustainability because of change, but even in times of change, how will the sustainability be managed? So what's important to them? What are the core values? Using the elemental preferences, how they want to be communicated with, and also using that to show their values externally as well. Because if people can see that there's a sustainable team, and again, they might not all be best friends, they might not all get on all the time, but how they manage those conflicts and leverage that diversity and show other teams and organizations that actually sustainability is possible. Because we know with sustainability, not only are resources managed and used well, and there's minimal wastage, but it's also about longevity, which, you know, does affect the bottom line, which is around profits. And so it's not just around the moral and the nature case, but there's also, you know, money and value to be proven in that way. So actually, sustainability really is the key. And I know in some of the other podcast guests have spoken about nature being able to withstand and nature being able to tolerate quite high levels of stress and strain, which is absolutely true. So in teams, how do we develop that? But we also need to think about that in relation to who supports that team and how that support's given to enable that sustainability. So it's not about just putting pressure on a team and saying you've got to withstand, but what is the trampoline that you put underneath someone to help them bounce back up in those difficult times?
Mm. That's interesting. And the sustainability message of TetraMap, which is now much more mainstream than it was originally, is seeming to have more and more resonance with people because search for more and more talent in bigger organizations. And one of the things they're looking to do is how can we keep and retain the talented people that we already have and help them continue to grow and learn and be sustainable in what they're doing, and bringing that sustainability external message into the workplace so it doesn't become something that you do separately to who you are as a person or separately to who you are as a team, but it becomes part of the way you actually think things through. And that's what's going to be the long-term change for us all, I hope.
Yes, and I think that's really, thank you for that summary, Louise. I think that's very beautifully framed and phrased.
Thank you. Well, that was fantastic, Leila, and thank you so much for meeting so early in the morning for you and sharing those thoughts with us. I would like to say to the listeners that if Leila is always open to hearing from other people and to having these discussions, so if anybody would like to contact you, Leila, how might they get in touch?
So my email is Leila, L-E-Y-L-A, at diverseminds.co.uk. And my website is https, diverseminds, all one word, .co.uk. And there's additional contact information on my website. And if anyone wants to book a 30-minute call with me via Skype, you're very welcome to do so via my website.
Fantastic. Well, thanks again, Leila. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you with us on the In Your Element podcast. And thanks again for all your contributions that you've made over the past few years to the TetraMap community. You're such a valued member of the way we work so interdependently across the globe. It's fantastic to have you with us.
Thank you, Louise. I've really, really enjoyed it. And the questions have been brilliant for me to reflect as well, which is not my elemental preference, but it's been brilliant for me to do and come out of my comfort zone. So thank you.
Well, thanks again, Leila. And let's hope some of our listeners contact you and find out more.